me Russ, Mr. Russ, AU, Baldy, whatever suits you, you're probably looking at me at this point thinking, okay, this is supposed to be for young people, so why did we get an old guy to come in here? And I don't have a good answer to that question for you guys. I preach over in Beaumont. I've been preaching for a long time. I've got two of my daughters with me. If y'all haven't met them, this is Tori and Emily. They are 16 and 15. And I guess maybe Jeff invited me to come over because he thought I knew something about kids. What I have figured out raising kids like y'all, I don't understand you guys. I don't get what's going on in your head. I'm confused. You can ask them. And then I have an older daughter who is 21, and so she is another issue altogether. So I guess what we're going to try to do this weekend is get to know each other a little bit, try to make some sense of some stuff. I'm a preacher, and so what I do is talk about the Bible with people, and rather than trying to entertain you like I know something about you, which I don't, what I want you to do is I want you to get your Bibles out, and what I'd like to do this weekend is try to help you learn some things about the Bible. I'm assuming that y'all know already what the theme for the weekend is. What are we going to be studying tonight and tomorrow? Okay, at this point, you need to respond. I beg your pardon? The road less traveled by? Okay, well, that's new to me because... what book is that in the Bible? Anybody know what book that is? Yeah, Robert Frost. That's right. Nobody got that but you. Okay. One other person. You must be a literature major. Okay. What book in the Bible is the road less traveled by based on? Okay, we're gonna study from Proverbs. Let's kind of start this. I want you to turn to Proverbs chapter 4. Y'all are intelligent. One thing I have figured out about teenagers is when you do decide to use your brain, it works very, very well. And so I don't want in any way to insult your intelligence. So what I want from you is I want you to think. I want you to try to pay attention, and we'll try to do the best we can to maybe help you learn some things from Proverbs. Maybe things you've thought about, maybe things that you haven't. And I want to begin this way this evening. In your opinion, what's the Bible about? Pretty broad question, but have you ever thought about that? What's the Bible about? God's people? I'm not looking for a right answer or a wrong answer. I'm looking for your answer. Yes, ma'am. Instructions to, y'all got to talk loud because not only am I bald, I'm deaf. Instructions on how to live, okay? Yes, ma'am. Okay? All right. Everybody hear that? Man falling from God, God trying to get man back. Yes, sir. Teaching the gospel being, you're right. What is the gospel? Okay? The Bible? All right. Anybody else? Nobody else has a clue what the Bible is all about. You know, when you're your age, that's a pretty hard question because how many of y'all worship here regularly, your families worship here? How many of y'all families are Christians? Everybody here, y'all hear about the Bible all the time, don't you? Okay? For a lot of people, and I think for a lot of teenagers, and we deal with this in our home, and I worry a little bit about my kids. For a lot of people, the Bible is just a big old rule book, and to tell us what we can do and what we can't do, and we understand there's heaven and hell involved, and we understand it tells us about God, and it tells us about sin, and it tells us about salvation, and all that is true. One of my kids called me a couple of weeks ago because they were in science class. Actually, they texted me and said, if I can remember, what does the Bible say about dinosaurs? And my response was, nothing. The Bible does not address the subject of dinosaurs. And do you know why the Bible doesn't say anything about dinosaurs? Have you ever wondered why the Bible doesn't say anything about dinosaurs? Why doesn't the Bible say anything about dinosaurs? Well, they are important. You hush. You already know the answer I'm looking for. This is my daughter. I can talk to her that way. Okay, I won't talk to anybody else that way. That's not the answer I'm looking for. Dinosaurs are important. Who made dinosaurs? That's a good question, isn't it? According to your science book, nobody made dinosaurs. But if dinosaurs existed, I believe they existed. Who made dinosaurs? Okay, so if God made them, there's got to be something significant about them. Anybody want to offer another reason why the Bible doesn't talk about dinosaurs? I'm sorry? Okay, they're extinct. All right, anybody want to offer another reason? Yes, sir. Okay, if y'all heard it, billions of years and stuff wasn't a thing thought up then. But it doesn't, still doesn't change that dinosaurs existed. I mean, think about this. What's the Bible intended? Oh, yes, sir, go ahead. Yeah, but the deal is the Bible's not intended to answer all of our questions, okay? And there are a lot of questions that people have, and God didn't design the Bible, to be a history book to answer every history question you've ever had. Didn't design the Bible to be a science book so that you can understand how He created everything, just as He created everything. Didn't explain what's happened to the earth over the time that the earth has stood, okay? There's a lot of things the Bible doesn't talk about. The Bible is intended to tell us about sin and salvation. That's the primary reason that God revealed everything that He revealed to us in the Bible. But there are a couple of places in the Bible that are intended to help us to live life a little better, to make life more enjoyable. If you've got your Bible, put your bookmark in Proverbs chapter 4. And then I want you to look at another couple of passages with me. Flip back to Deuteronomy. Everybody, I'm assuming y'all know where all these books are, right? Any new, just started going to church, don't know where everything is. If you don't, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Or in my Bible, page 268, okay? In the book of Deuteronomy, anybody know what Deuteronomy is about? No. Yes. Okay. Yeah, Moses dies at the end of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is when Moses has brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, and they've gotten to the promised land, and they're about to go in, and Moses is about to die. It's kind of like his last will. And he's telling these people, he's kind of reviewing their history. I want you to look at chapter 6, and I want you to look at verses 24 and 25 with me. At this point in Deuteronomy, what Moses has said, what God has said is, at the very beginning of this chapter, I want you to tell your children about me. I want you to talk with your children about my laws. Talk about it when you get up. Talk about it when you go to bed. Talk about it when you walk by the road. And the point is, you're going to go into this land, and you're going to enjoy all this stuff, and you're going to forget me. So God says, I want you to talk about me with your kids. And when you get to verse 24 at the very end of this, it says, if you back up to verse 20, when your son asks you in time to come saying, what's the meaning of the testimonies? And this is where y'all fit into this. If y'all had been born in the wilderness, there would come a point in time that you would say, hey, Dad, how come do we have to keep all these laws? Have you ever wondered that, being the child of Christians? Why do we have to live this way and nobody else lives this way? That's the question that's being asked. When your son asks you in the time to come, what is the meaning of the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments? I want you to notice verse 24. The Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, that He might preserve us alive as it is this day. It will be righteousness for us if we're careful to observe all the commandments before the Lord our God as He commanded us. Now, there are other passages that offer this same kind of idea. But one of the things that I want you to learn from the book of Proverbs is that if you will try to live the life that God recommends, your life will be better. Okay? Anybody want to take a guess as to why that is the case? Why is it if you do what God says, it makes your life better? Not just do you get to go to heaven after you die. The point is, life's better before you die, Now, why? Why do you think? You raised your hand. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay, well, there is some contentment in knowing what's going to happen, but not, and that's true, and I don't want to undervalue that, but I want you to think about this. How old are most of you? Are most of you under 18? Anybody here over 18? Okay, one. Yeah, you either are or you aren't, okay? Okay, in math, yes. 18, have you reached your 18th birthday yet? Okay, so you're over 18. Are you an anomaly of nature? Okay, all right. Well, most of you are under 18. Now, let me ask you this question. How old do you reasonably expect to live? 80? 85? I mean, everybody agree, if nothing tragic happens to you, that you'll probably live for another, what, 65 or 70 years. Would you agree with that? If nothing tragic happens. Okay. That's a long time to wait for something good to happen, isn't it? I agree with you when you say that what doing God's laws, obeying God, makes us content because of what we're waiting for. But to be awfully honest with you, one of the difficulties is it's a long time unless something bad happens, and you don't want something bad to happen to you. And there's some truth in that, and that's one of the reasons that God encourages people to learn patience. But there are other things to be benefited from doing what God says. And there are a couple of books in the Bible that are written almost exclusively to try to help our life to be better, every day to be better. Okay, mainly because what happens if you do God's will is you avoid lots of problems. You avoid lots of, not just sin because it's sin, which is violating God's will, but sin that results in really bad consequences for you and for me. And the sooner you understand that there are benefits now, not just when you die, the sooner you understand the parts of the Bible that are called wisdom literature. Okay, you ever heard that? You remember when you were kids in your Bible classes and you learned about the different sections of the Bible? Anybody remember what some of those are? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy are books of what? Anybody know? Yes. Well, yeah, some people call them law. That's good. All right, we'll go with that. What about 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles? Well, Kings, yeah. What are those books? They tell us about kings. When did those kings live? Not a date, just recently? In the past. What do you call it in school when you study things that happened in the past? History, okay? You've got books of history. You've got books of law. You have prophets. You have poetry. What's a book of poetry? Proverb. No, not proverb. Psalms. Psalms is poetry. And then you've got Proverbs, which is wisdom literature. And what wisdom literature does is it is the collection of people to try to help us learn about how to make life better. Okay, and this is one of those sections, and it is intended for everyday use. Here and now, not just what's going to happen in heaven. And that's why it's important for you guys to study it. How many of you have ever studied the Proverbs? All of you. All right, good. How many of you know it like the back of your hand? I mean, you know it like the front of your hand. Okay. Turn to Proverbs chapter 4. We're going to do a little bit of an introduction tomorrow. Tomorrow, the classes that I'm teaching, which will be the junior high and the high school, we're going to study two things from Proverbs. We're going to study wisdom and folly. Anybody know what folly is? Okay, foolishness, same word. Anybody want to offer a synonym? Yeah. Do what? Immaturity is pretty good. Stupidity is not a bad one, okay? We don't like to use that word. I was preaching here a while back, and a parent came up and said, I just want you to know, during your sermon tonight, you used the S word. And I thought, there's no way. And she said, we don't teach our kids to say stupid. And my response was, well, I'm sorry. Some things are just stupid, though. And that's kind of the idea of folly. So tomorrow, we're going to talk about things that are just things that are smart, things that are kind of stupid, wisdom and folly. And then the other class I'm teaching is going to be on the tongue. The Proverbs has a lot to say about a lot of things, and we're going to do a little bit of an introduction generally tomorrow. So I'm going to save some of that. I want you to notice in Proverbs chapter 4, and for the next few minutes tonight, what I think is a kind of a general introduction. If you take notes, let me give you this. The first 9 chapters of Proverbs. Well, let's do it this way first. Who wrote most of Proverbs? Anybody know? Solomon. Okay, what was unique about Solomon besides the fact that he had 1,000 wives, which is the first thing that comes to all the guys' minds? Okay, why was he wise? Is that what everybody else is going to say? He was wise. What else? Yes, ma'am. He was David's son. Very good. What else? Is that what you were going to say too? Okay, he got his wisdom from God. That's right. And that's the unique thing about his wisdom, okay? Solomon wrote, as far as we can tell, most of the Proverbs. The first 9 chapters are all one section. And as you read them, and we'll touch again on this in the morning, but as you read them, one of the things that you notice in the first 9 chapters is he keeps saying, like in chapter 1 and verse 8, my son, again in verse 10, my son. Chapter 2 and verse 1, my son. Chapter 3 and verse 1, my son. Chapter 3 and verse 21, my son. Chapter 4 and verse 1, hear my children. Verse 10, hear my son. Verse 20, hear my son. Who's Solomon writing this stuff for? Okay, his kids, okay? Not just his son, but you have to understand it's a pretty male-dominated society, okay? But he's writing this stuff for his kids. And the first 9 chapters, what Solomon says over and over and over is, I want you to listen to him and your life's going to be better. If you don't get anything else out of this weekend, get that. If you will listen to the things that are said in this book, your life's going to be better. Well, if you'll listen to them and do them. If you listen to them and don't do them, we're right back to that stupid versus smart thing again, okay? So, a real good kind of general introductions in chapter 4. We're going to read verse 20 through 27, okay? And this is kind of in the middle of things that he's saying, and there's a lot of repetition, but this is what we're going to look at for the rest of the time tonight. Verse 20, my son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth. Put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Let your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet. Let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil. Now, there's a bunch of stuff there, but there's 3 or 4 things I want to look at particularly. And the reason I want to look at them is because they are very much like wise sayings that we have. Can you think of any little wise sayings that people pass down from time to time? For instance, I'll give you one to start with so you'll know kind of the direction I'm thinking. If you can't stand the heat, nobody knows that. Oh, mercy. Yeah, well, you're old. How old are you, Daniel? 30? Are you serious? 23. Well, you're old, man. You know? How many of you think Daniel's old? 23? Oh, come on. You guys don't think 23 is old? Not compared to your dad. I hesitate to ask this. How old's your dad? 39. Oh, mercy. You have to go sit in the back in the corner for the rest of class, okay? 39, I'm about to turn 53, so I'm like ancient, okay? I've completely lost track of lost my mind. Where was I going with this? Yeah, that's right. What Yeah, the deal is nobody understands these old sayings. Okay. The saying is, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. Do you understand what that means? What does it mean if you're in the house? If it's real hot in the kitchen, do what? Now, how does that apply to other things? Do you know? Okay, if you want to apply to temptation, and that's an excellent application, if you can't handle the temptation, get away from whatever the temptation is. Really, it's kind of a statement that applies much more broadly, even than temptation. The idea being, if the circumstance that you're in is too much for you, then you need to get away from it, whatever it is. Okay, now that is a modern proverb. It's a wise little saying that helps you to understand how to deal with a particular situation. How about this one? Don't cry over spilt milk. All right, I found one they all know. What does that mean? Don't cry over spilt milk. Do what? Okay, when something happens and it's done, there's not much you can do about it. And that's the idea. It's not, you don't say that only when you spill milk, okay? You say that when you're in a circumstance that has already taken place and there's just not much you can do about it. And that's kind of the way Proverbs are. They are little statements of smartness as opposed to little statements of stupidity and that wisdom. And they're intended to help you go through the day today and make today better. Now, can you think of any others? What? Don't bite the hand that feeds you. All right. That's everybody understand what that means? That doesn't mean don't bite your parents' hand. Okay? What it does mean is you better appreciate and not disregard wherever your care comes from. Okay? You understand the way Proverbs work. Now, I want you to look at some in this passage that are very much like those kinds of Proverbs. I want to look really at three and a half of them. Starting first of all in verse 23, which says, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life." Okay? This is kind of like a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Y'all understand that one? Don't cry over spilt milk. It's just a little pithy, meaning a statement that's not real intellectual, not intended to have to delve into and define all your terms to understand what it means, but it helps you. Okay, this is, in my opinion, the most significant statement in all of Proverbs. Why would I say the most significant statement in all of Proverbs is guard your heart with all diligence? What is your heart here? Let's do it. Let's just take it a piece at a time. What's your heart in the Bible? Your soul? Okay, anybody else? Your desires? Keep thinking. Your morals? What do all those things have in common? Where do they come from? Where do your desires, your morals, your soul, even, I would argue this, where does that all come from? Is it the instrument that beats, that pumps your blood? Is that where all that starts? Yeah, it's your brain, it's your mind. In the Bible, most of the time, the heart is your mind, okay? And one of the things to understand about ourselves, and you already understand it, but we don't talk about it a lot, and it's a very significant concept, is that you have the power to control your mind. You can do whatever you want to do. In fact, the biggest problem I have with my teenagers is that my teenagers want to do what they want to do instead of what I want them to do. Okay? Do you ever have any issues with that at your house? I got two grins, and all the rest of you are lying. Okay? Biggest conflict you have with your parents is what? What you want as opposed to what they want. Am I right? And do you know that's not just parents and children? That's husbands and wives. That's employers and employees. That's the biggest problem people have with other people and is the biggest problem people have with God. And God made us in such a way that we can do exactly what we want to do. We have control of our mind. If your mind functions normally, you know, there are people that have deficiencies. They have mental issues or emotional issues where their mind may not work properly. But for the average person whose mind works properly, you and I, we have control. We have control over what we say and what we do. And And by the way, if you want to really argue about why evolution is not true, this is the biggest reason, okay? We are not animals who operate just based on whatever we feel. We are the only being on the planet that can do what we want to do just because we want to do it. We have a will. You have a will. And God's argument, God's little proverb for us is, guard that. Guard your heart. You guard your mind. So the question is, how do you guard something? If I were to give you my wallet, something more valuable. If I were to give you my cell phone, is there anything in your life more valuable than your cell phone? Huh? I got one honest answer. Young lady in the back going, no, nothing's more important to me than my cell phone. If I were to give you my cell phone and say, guard this, what would you do? If you did it faithfully, okay? If you don't like me, just chunk it in the water or something, say, there. Yes, sir. What would you do to guard my cell phone? Put it in your pocket. Please don't do that. Why would you put it in your pocket? So nobody could grab and take it. What would you do? Anybody else? What would you do to guard my... Yes, ma'am. Lock it up somewhere. Okay? Anybody else? Sorry? Put it in your purse. Well, I don't have a purse, but you put it in your purse. Okay? That'd be great. Yes, ma'am. Put it in a life-proof case. Okay? Anybody else? What does all that have in common? What's the one thing that's in common to all the answers you just gave me? Do what? Physical protection from something outside, right? Okay, now I want you to think about it. When you guard something, what you're doing is keeping what's outside out. When God says, I want you to guard your mind, how do you do that? Be careful of what you think. What determines what you think? What you see? I heard lots of answers. Say it again. Who you associate, what you hear? What else? What you want? I keep hearing a man's voice, a male voice. Yeah. What you do? Okay, yes, sir. What you see? What you read? What you hear, the kind of the TV shows you watch, the movies you watch, what you look at on the internet, the kind of music you listen to. How many times have you heard the preacher say, hey, you need to be careful? I'm sure Jeff does this. I hope you guys do. I'm sure you do. Probably you heard it more from, how many were here when Mr. Curtis was still preaching here? Usually this is an old guy's thing, all right? You need to... Don't you be watching dirty movies. Don't you be watching dirty TV shows. Don't you be looking at dirty pictures on the internet. Well, you know, they're all right. And I'm sure that the preachers you have now say that stuff to you all the time. And generally your reaction to that is what? Be honest. Do you ever think, I can look at that stuff, it's not going to hurt me. Do you? You know, I can go to a movie that has some language in it. It's not going to hurt me. Because I don't talk that way. And I don't pay attention to how many honest, be honest with me. How many of you think that way? What's the problem with that? I mean, you may be strong enough to hear bad language all the time. And do you go to public schools? Most of you? Do you ever hear any cuss words at school? Huh? Yeah. Do you ever hear any sentences that don't involve a cuss word at school? It's probably the better answer. Well, this is the world we live in. And so you can't stay away from all of it, but do those words ever pop into your head? Do they? I'm not asking if you use them. I'm assuming that you don't. You wouldn't be here on Friday night if that was the kind of person you are. Why do those words pop into your head? Because they're coming in all the time. Now, sometimes you're in a situation you can't do anything about that, right? At school. Now, there's some things you can do better at school. What can you do to try to avoid that? Choose the people that you associate with. Or let them know, you know, hey, don't use that language around me. That's hard, isn't it? But you know what all that's doing? It's guarding your heart. because once you get them in there, it's awfully hard to get them out. You think I'm old, but I'm assuming you probably think I'm old. When I was your age, anybody over 30, I thought was pretty old. I knew a man years ago that was literally an older man who was a preacher. He, at this time, he was probably 85. And he grew up out west, even out west from here. And he grew up cowboying. That's what he did when he was a kid, when he was y'all's age. Some of you boys, time he was your age, he was working on ranches around. And he wasn't very godly. And he told me, he's 85 years old, I guess, when he tells me. He said, when I was a young man, I used a lot of profanity. I heard a lot of profanity. Everybody I worked around were a bunch of cowboys. And he was a preacher, and he'd been preaching at this point for probably 50, 60 years. One of the most godly men I've ever met in my life. And he said, Russ, he said, I'm 85 years old, and those words still pop into my head. And I thought, man, at 85, you know, he's not been living that life for 70, 75 years now. And yet, those were still things that he still had to be cautious about that. Now, I want you to understand this proverb. You pay attention to what gets in your head. The point being, once it's in there, it's really hard to get it back out. And the same is true in regards to profanity, to pornography, to violence. What comes inside is going to affect the way you think. And it's not necessarily going to determine the life you lead, but it's always going to be a fight. And so Solomon's advice to us is, look, you with all diligence, you guard your heart. You keep your heart. What's diligence? Persistence, good word. Anybody else? Diligence is working hard at something. You know, to make it just the persistence is an excellent word. But, you know, for guys like me, if you're diligent, you just work hard. That means you work really hard. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to be honest with yourself. Do you work hard to pay attention to the things that come in your mind? And if you don't, Solomon says you need to do that. You need to work really hard. You need to pay attention to what you read. You need to pay attention to what you hear. You need to pay attention to what you see. And Solomon's reason is at the end of verse 23 when he says, out of it spring the issues of life. This doesn't translate really well into English. The idea of issue here is the idea of water coming up out of the ground. Have you ever seen an artesian well? Anybody know what an artesian well is? Anybody know what a well is? Okay? You do know that water doesn't just come out of a pipe, right? Y'all got all that, okay? An artesian well is a place where there's a natural hole in the ground where the water's under pressure and it shoots out, okay, like a spring. But an artesian well a lot of times shoots out really hard, okay? A spring is where the water comes up. A fountain, that water is channeled and pressurized where it comes out. The word issues describes a fountain, okay? It issues forth. And Solomon's point is, whatever you let in here, that's what's going to bubble out. What you do with your life is all going to be determined by what you put into your head. Any of you computer nuts? No? Yeah. One. Okay. Here's a computer term for you. Garbage in, garbage out. In computer terms, and I am, that's persistence and garbage out both, man. If I had gold stars, you'd be getting gold stars in it. In computer terms, what that means is when you program a computer, when you work on a computer, when you put data in a computer, if you put junk in, you're going to get junk out. The computer's not a miracle worker that somehow or the other transforms bad stuff into good stuff. That's computer language. You need to understand that in your head, garbage in, garbage out. The more you allow junk to get in your head, the more junk you're going to have to deal with in your life. And that's going to be every day. Okay, it's not just going to be, it's going to affect me when I'm 70 years old and I'm getting close to dying. It's going to affect you tomorrow because you think about bad things, you expose yourself to bad things. Then you're going to have to work on, I'm not going to use that language. Well, wouldn't it be nice if you weren't tempted to use that language? I'm not going to think about those pictures. I'm not going to think about what I saw. Well, wouldn't it be better if you didn't see it? And then you wouldn't have to worry about what you let your mind dwell on, which is the problem with, for the most part in our society, sexual immorality is a function of just nudity. We are so given in our world to exposure, the way that men and women dress, what they see in movies, what they see on the internet, and the more you're exposed to sexual imagery, the less you have stigmas and defenses against it, and the easier it is to pop into your mind, and the easier it is to act on it, because out of your heart spring what you do in your life. Does that make sense? Okay, it's not a hard concept. So the challenge is, what are you going to do about that? I'm going to have to pay attention. I'm going to have to guard my heart. The next one here, we're almost out of time, so I'm going to run through this one. One of these, the next one we're going to talk about in one of the classes tomorrow, where he says, put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. That's the idea of using your tongue properly, and that's one of the things we'll talk about in class tomorrow. The other one I would point out is in verses 25 and 26. Let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. The proverb here is, think about what you do. Okay? Look at what's happening in your life. Any of y'all play ball? Any of y'all play baseball? What's one? Do y'all play baseball? Yeah, what kind of ball do you play? Football, basketball. What? Somebody over here, raise your hand. Baseball. Okay. Any of these sports. In baseball, what do you have to do when you're batting? What's the primary thing you have to do in your batting to be effective? Keep your eye on the ball. If you're throwing a football, what's going to make you accurate? Keeping your eye on your target. My girls play soccer. If you're going to score a goal when you're kicking the ball, what should you be focused on? The goal. Okay? We understand in sports, because it's so very fundamental, that you really have to focus on what you're doing. Does that make sense? You have to keep your eye on the ball. You have to keep your eye on your target, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Every sport is that way. That's essentially what Solomon's saying here. You need to pay attention. You need to look at where you're going. If I walked you up here, blindfolded you, spun you around two or three times, and then said, run to the back of the building, what would happen to you? Yeah, chances are you'd run into this table, you'd run into one of these pews, run over Brent. I mean, there are a lot of things that could happen to you. Why? Because you can't see where you're going. How many of you every day, when you go about your business, school, sports, whatever you're doing, how many of you actually think about everything you do? Probably not much. But because what we all tend to do is we all just tend to get up and just go where we're going. Now, we know what we're supposed to be doing, but a lot of times when decisions confront us, we don't always stop and think through, okay, what's going to happen? When he says, let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look, ponder the path of your feet. The idea is, if I step right here, where's that going to take me? And he's not talking about walking. What's he talking about? Yeah, decisions you make. My oldest daughter, when she was your age, we had a little, I don't know, analogy that we used a lot. And I'll mention this again tomorrow. This is kind of the idea of wisdom. Wisdom essentially is the ability to look down the road. Have you ever set up a bunch of dominoes in the end, and you push one over, and what happens? They all knock the rest of them over. Well, with Haley, this is the way I've tried to describe. This is life. Every decision you make, what you're essentially doing is pushing over a domino. Okay? And what happens is that decision is going to affect other things and have consequences attached to it. And when you're a teenager, a lot of times all you're looking at is the next domino. All you're thinking about is, if I do this, this might happen. The older you get, what happens is you start thinking farther down the line. If I do this, then this may happen, and this may happen, and this may happen, and this may happen. And the challenge that God offers, that Solomon's trying to get his kids to learn is, what I want you to do is I want you to think ahead. I want you to look at where you're going, not just the next step. Is that the way you walk? Do you always look at just the next step you're going to take? No, you're looking at farther ahead. And that's what he's trying to get us to do, and to think about it. The people you date, okay? What's the big deciding factor in who you date? Be honest. What's the first thing that would decide, I want to go out with this person? Thank you. One honest man in the whole place. He said looks, okay? What other factors would decide who you would date? Yes, ma'am. Okay, are my parents going to like, good for you. Did you two hear that? Talking to my girls, okay? Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, I got it. Their personality. Yes, sir. Okay, if they're a Christian. Yes, sir. Okay, they're friends. Now, honestly, do you think about all those things? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Where do y'all hang out? I started to say Burger King. Y'all probably don't know Burger King types. Whataburger. Where do y'all hang out? Where do you like to go? Huh? If you're gonna meet a bunch of your friends, where would y'all be? Do what? Starbucks. Are you serious? Y'all are too young to be hanging out at Starbucks. Mercy, y'all are a bunch of yuppies, aren't you? Skate park. Okay, here we are. We're at Starbucks. All right? Young ladies, you're at Starbucks. And this guy walks in. Yeah, see? Are you thinking about it yet? This guy walks into Starbucks, young ladies, and he is absolutely gorgeous. 6'2", khaki breeches, cowboy boots, nice silver buckle, goatee, bald-headed, man of your dreams. No, seriously, some guy walks in, and he's just the nicest-looking guy you've ever seen in your life, okay? Your picture of human masculinity. And he walks up and starts talking to you and paying attention to you. Are you going to be flattered by that? Are you going to be thinking all those things we just talked about? No. I mean, and that's the reality. When we're sitting right here, it's easy to look down the road. But when you're at school, or when you're at work, or when you're at Starbucks, and when things happen, when temptation happens, Satan's not gonna try to catch you when you're on your best behavior and on the defensive. What he's going to try to do is to tempt you with things and with people when you're not watching. And Solomon's advice to his children is, look, you let your eyes stay focused on what's important, what the goal is. Pay attention to what's really important in your life, and you think about every step you take. And I'm going to tell you what that demands of y'all. It demands that you think a lot more maturely than most people your age are going to think. Okay? And it's hard. It's hard for adults. I'm 53 years old, and there's a lot of days I get up and I just go and I don't stop and think about everything I do. The sooner you develop that habit, where every decision you have to make, you think, that makes a lot of time. No, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just means stopping and considering what's important and how this decision is going to affect me today. That's wisdom. Now, those are the two things. If you could get those two things, guard your heart, diligently, because this is what life springs from. And ponder the path of your feet and let your eyes look straight ahead. You think about what you're doing and the decisions and where you're wanting to go with your life. And that's probably the question I need to leave you with is, where do you want to go with your life? That's something I'd ask you to think about before we come back to class tomorrow. What is it that you want out of life, and what's really important? Because the wisdom stuff we're talking about isn't going to mean diddly squat to you if living a good life and being godly is not important to you. But if it is, and you can get these two things down, then I guarantee you, when you're 25 years old, you won't look back on your teenage years and think, I made some horrible mistakes that are going to affect me for the rest of my life. Just because you learned a couple of simple little things. All right, now, questions or comments? I'm taking too much time. Anybody? I'm a preacher, so I'm supposed to be long-winded. Anybody any questions or comments or anything you want to talk about this stuff? Does that make sense to you? Okay, tomorrow we will talk in the classes I'm teaching, again, about wisdom and folly and about the tongue. And so we'll look at some of these proverbs, what they have to say about that stuff. Thank y'all. Thank you for participating. Y'all make it really easy, and I appreciate it a whole lot.